Today is Thursday. It's March 29th, 2018. It's 11:13 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio. Listen to my show weekdays on WGN Radio from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon.
I never miss it. I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Patty Vasquez, the host of Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Friday.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City and the podcast right here on WGN+.
I'm Eric Zorn, the currently despised columnist from the Tribune. Wow. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
When did that start?
As of yesterday. It just started yesterday.
Isn't it intermittent?
I was beloved before that.
Yesterday, what you think? That's what you're going.
Yeah, I'm going.
Yeah, you go after a 90-year-old nun. Gee, it's amazing that people took umbrage to this.
98.
I have several important topics to talk about with you all today, and the first one is Eric Zorn wrote a piece this week for which he will now eat crow or burn in hell. Headlined, "Choosing Loyalty Over Loyola: Why I'm Rooting Against the Ramblers." You're wearing a Michigan sweatshirt. Explain yourself.
Well, I grew up in the shadow of Michigan Stadium. I'm a Michigan alum, and I've been rooting for Michigan all my life. And I think that you Loyola bandwagon hoppers on.
I'm wearing a Harry Potter scarf.
Wait, right there.
I'm even Catholic for this game. I
have a long relationship with Loyola University of Chicago. They actually, I love saying this, house my papers and archive my cartoons. This isn't a bandwagon
thing. How many games did you go to this year, Scott?
Well, that's really not the point.
We let Eric finish his point. What are you saying?
I'm a Michigan fan from way back, my whole life.
How many games you go to this year?
This year, I've watched almost all of them.
Okay. Well, that counts.
But I don't live in Ann Arbor, so I don't go to the game. And I often go up to see them play at Northwestern. Didn't go this year, and they lost.
What did your dad do for a living?
He is a retired professor of physics at Michigan.
So you get that. I mean, you get to have that.
Yeah, and I don't think...
What a shame for you that you don't get to enjoy...
Oh, I'm enjoying this immensely.
The Loyola run. I mean, really, not only is America enjoying this and needs this. You know, the NCAA basketball tournament this year is the distraction that maybe the Cubs World Series was in 2016 when we needed something to remind us of something besides the front page of the newspapers. It's just great for America, and it's so great for Chicago. And as I wear this Loyola scarf, which I bought a week ago.
You're a long time.
I go way back to after the second win in the tournament. It's just been great.
I'll disagree with you a little bit. I mean, it's been fun here in Chicago, but I think you might be inflating its importance around the country. Your school Butler did this a couple of times not too many years ago. I mean, I don't know that the whole world is signing on to the Loyola Ramblers.
I think Sister Jean bumps us up to a bigger level
nationally.
Yeah, there's
a great billboard. If we can go back to Ann Arbor, there's outside Ann Arbor, there's a billboard in the maize in blue colors, and it says, "Sister Jean is about to learn the difference between heaven and hail,"
which
I think is brilliant. Hail as in Hail, Michigan?
Hail to the victors.
Yeah, that's their song. Have you ever heard it?
Yeah, but there's also a billboard in Chicago at a bar, and it says, "Sister Jean, your table for four is ready."
At the candlelight, yes.
Which is very nice.
Also, she gave up losing for Lent, so she says, but she's not going to make it.
Are you on the bandwagon?
I'm on the bandwagon. It's very exciting. Yeah, I love it.
I mean, it's a great story. I've been rooting for Loyola all along, and I'll root for them on Monday night if for some fluke reason they get into the final game.
It's been a fluke that they've won every game.
Hey, they have 7% chance of winning the whole thing, okay?
It's a cool story. They're a great team. They play together. They play basketball the way it's supposed to be played. They're unselfish, and everything about it is a great story.
And by the way, I picked them to go to the Final Four in my pool. Yes, I did. I'm in the money.
Who do you have winning the whole thing?
I had Auburn, so that was wrong. but the championship game was Auburn against Loyola. What I did is every year, it's 500 people in this pool. Every year I come in, like 498th. So I just decided to pick places where I live.
And people that archive your work, apparently.
Yes.
And how's that working out for you?
I'm in the money. I have a 75% chance of winning the whole thing.
What would that be?
I've had enough controversy the last couple of weeks. I don't
want to talk about your gambling winnings, too.
Yes, yes. It's in the thousands.
Do you want to say anything about that, Scott?
I do. I was going to save it for our recommendations, but I can say it now. A story came out recently that I had purchased followers on Twitter, 5,000 of them in 2015. I can't say anything more other than what was in the story.
Purchased them?
It was purchased under my account and for my Twitter followers.
That's the way you put it online and
yes.
In print, and I was a little confused by that. You don't have to answer this, my friend, but that makes it sound like, so did you or did you not purchase those Twitter followers?
I didn't have knowledge of it until recently.
Oh.
Well, I think that's a different story completely. I think that exonerates you in some ways that other people don't get.
Well, yes and no. I take full responsibility.
Because the person
for this.
Who did that for you apparently had permission to do marketing for you or to make decisions for you.
Or did it as a favor for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what were you thinking when we were all talking about this conversation around Eric Roper?
I had no
Richard Roper.
Richard Roper. I had no knowledge at the time, so I.
You were unaware of it at that time.
No, I was not. No, I would have come forward then.
When I found out about it,
I came forward to my superiors, to my immediate supervisor, with HR and the management of the Chicago Tribune. I provided them all the records they needed, and all of my financial records.
I want to leave you alone and give you a podcast fellow hug. But how did you find out?
There's some things I won't answer.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. That must have hit you like a ton of bricks. Like,
it was a bad
crap.
Day. It's been a terrible couple of weeks. It really has been.
I'm following you again.
Yes, I know. And you are so sweet. And I do want to say this to you guys, that if any embarrassment I brought on to this podcast or to you guys.
We do that on our own.
Besides Eric.
Well, I say that sincerely because you mentioned we talked about Roper a number of months ago.
I had some choice words in that situation when you were on my show, as a matter of fact.
You did. And well, I have some choice words for myself.
And there's also a matter of scale here. I mean, the Roper situation had a couple hundred thousand or something? I mean, he had a lot more.
The bulk.
I mean, I got to say, I think the Tribune handled this well. I was really glad to see that there was no, they didn't make too much of this.
Well, they followed the Zorn model you laid out in your column. Actually, well, you said it was
about Michigan and Loyola. What are we talking about?
Well, yes.
I do think that part of it, too, is, for a lot of people, is that as a member of the editorial board, I think, was what kind of elevated it, too, in contrast to Richard Roper's situation. That's why I think, even though Richard's were bigger numbers, there's a standard that they have at the Tribune.
Well, I'm glad it's behind you.
Yeah, and like I said, I stand by the apology. I'm mortified, and I hope we can move forward.
We do right now.
No, we can't, John. I'm sorry, Scott.
Eric, back that truck up.
Every week we're going to talk about this.
Well, you're here.
Okay, there's so many stories in Trump land. I'll just throw some of them out, and you guys tell me which ones catch your ear the most. In Trump land, the president has appointed his personal physician to run the VA. He's punched at Amazon, but not really at Facebook. The administration wants a citizenship test, and stormy weathers continue to cloud everything the president does. Though he curiously has said and tweeted very little about it.
In vague ways, I think.
Well, yeah. It's good to know that the new secretary will slim down the VA just as he did the president. So
that could be helpful.
I'm sorry,
matters.
Steve. I'm sure that was funnier than we just made it sound.
He's the guy who gave the president his physical and said that the president came in 1 pound under obese.
I know that.
And the psychological test was, suspicious. Is this a cat? Was that what it was?
This is a guy who served previous administrations.
And was respected in the Obama administration,
right, so
too.
I don't want to throw him under the bus. My only problem with it is that I didn't know that therefore qualified you to run a very troubled VA.
A huge bureaucracy.
Everyone says it's the second biggest bureaucracy in the federal government. So what's the first? Is it
defense?
I would guess.
Maybe.
None of the stories point out what the biggest one is.
Yeah. Well, so what's your take on the president this week and Stormy Daniels particularly?
I think it's a problem, especially if they do have to, if he has to testify, it'll be the first sitting president since Clinton, which all the people who are like, well, look what Bill Clinton did. Well, fine. He should also be treated the same way. And this is, I think it's more for many people about where the money came from and whether or not that's what violated the law.
Yeah, absolutely. This is and like the Clinton case, though, this is not just about, you know, the prurient interest in an affair. This is something that's legal and that looks to me, at least on the face of it, like laws have been broken.
Scott, I disagree. I think this is absolutely about the prurient affair. I think it is about, you know, slick, snarky lawyers pounding the table and about a woman named Stormy Daniels, for God's sakes, and a Playboy model.
It's not her real name. It's not a real name, John. You know that, right?
Well, she was always Stormy to me.
I was serving dark and stormy cocktails during
the
60-minute interview.
For search engine purposes?
No, listen, and I've talked about it ad nauseum, too, so I'm not saying I'm above this. I'm just, you guys, with the exception of the direction Eric points us, I still think this is inflated in the national discourse.
Well, we'll see if it's inflated. It's certainly getting a lot of play because the president of the United States paid hush money to a porn star.
Yes. His attorney did. His attorney did,
in his name.
Why are you looking at me like I'm...
And his attorney also created this non-disclosure agreement to hush her up.
That's what he's saying, yeah. That doesn't
pass
the porn
test. It could not possibly have been without his knowledge.
Okay, all right, but we're not living in a vacuum, guys. This is a president who said things to Access Hollywood and still got elected. So I'm trying to find how this is a new story or a new version of Donald.
Was anyone else surprised that it was only one time?
I was disappointed in the interview, frankly. I thought that there was going to be more there.
They only had one rendezvous?
They only had one sexual encounter. And
sure.
I don't know. I started to black out when she was talking about him being perched on the edge of the bed, presumably naked, just waiting for her. I was like,
And she goes, okay, here we go.
That was weird.
Here we go.
That was weird, too. She could have easily just said, no, I'm walking out of the room or whatever. And she kind of said, well, I got myself into this. Might as well go through
it. Did you find her credible?
Well, I do find her credible. I don't find her. I won't be inviting her over. You know.
This has come up in the last few months when it comes to bad dating, right? With the Aziz Ansari thing, women who have come forward and said, "I've been in a situation where I'm like, I'll just get it over with and have sex with the guy." It's not uncommon for whatever a sad reason.
Well,
and this seems different. She seems to think that
this was transactional.
Well, do you think that she said it was not transactional?
She didn't take any money for the
encounter. No, but she also said she kept going to him because she thought it could be good for business.
Well, sure, for the
or
position
she'd be on TV.
I'm not coming down against her. I mean, I believe her. I think it all happened. I don't mean that, but
Marisha Meek had a good column on this on Wednesday's Tribune, which is online. Talking about how this is a situation that women should not feel that they're in that situation. They should not feel like, well, here I am in a hotel room. I guess I got to go through with it. That's part of what this – and Stormy Daniels was saying, or Stephanie Clifford, her actual name, was saying that this was not a hashtag Me Too moment. She's not a victim. But Mary's point was that she is, in fact, a victim of this mindset that
many
women have, of this culture. So that's a
– Yeah, see, I'd take issue with that because she clearly is very intelligent, very – alert and with it, and she made that choice. She clearly had the self-confidence and the strength to walk out if
but
she
I don't
wanted
think
to.
It was as troublesome to her. I mean, this is right. She's an adult film star, so it sounded to her like, oh, I got to work an extra shift. No, really, I mean, her sort of frustration with having sex with Donald Trump was different than maybe anybody else's would have been.
Right.
Well, did you guys also hear on the right-wing Twitter thingies that they were posting close-ups of her face?
Pupils, yeah.
You saw that.
Geez,
but her pupils were extremely dilated. And they said, see, she was dilated, so clearly she was stoned and was unable to communicate. I'm thinking the stress that she must be under for the story, the stress that someone comes up to her, and I totally believe the story where some goon comes up
and threatens her
in front of her child. I totally believe this.
Yeah, I do too.
Because those are the types of people. That's the kind of guy Trump is, and that given the environment that he worked in and maneuvered in New York City, I believe that that's true.
I believe that story about the threat, but it did sound like it was right out of a movie, didn't it? Like
she got her kid in the back.
You got
seat.
A nice kid there. Be ashamed. Something. I mean, it was like, really? That's how it happened.
Well,
I mean, I overall, I find her credible. That part was the one that I kind of. Was
John Cast relates a very similar story that he experienced here in Chicago when he was out to dinner with
his
wife.
Who did he threaten?
Right, get that voice.
It was Eric.
I want to ask you guys.
I actually remember those stories when that was happening with Cast.
Yes, Eric. Yeah.
Finish the story.
As I understand it, maybe.
Well, Steve, I don't remember the details of it, but it was he was
out to dinner with his family,
an officer or a politician or something like that. Or it was a union, wasn't it?
It was a goon. It was a goon of some kind. Yeah. And he came up to his table, and he was actually having dinner with someone who'd won dinner with John Cass. And he comes up to Cass, and his wife is there. He says, "Yeah, nice kids, cute kids playing in your front yard."
Ooh. That's menacing.
Okay, but who amongst us has not had a phone call, a tweet, a text, an email, a snail mail, some sort of reaction from a listener or a reader that you felt threatened by? Right? I mean, I sure
absolutely.
Have.
Sure.
I presume we all
have. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is different, and she's not a journalist, but I believe that scene.
I've never had one face-to-face. I've never had anyone come up to me personally. I've had, you know, emails and so on.
Because they're right. Because most people are cowards. This is direct.
I had somebody emailing me my address and, you know, the names of my kids and stuff like that. You know,
wow.
You know, what? Okay, let's talk about citizenship test. Steve, did that jump out at you as a political thing, or did you think, yeah, we should find out who's here? And a logical question is, are you a citizen?
I haven't sorted. I honestly haven't sorted that one out. I
think if the Democrats were doing this, we wouldn't put it in the political terms that we are.
Well, but also the way Sandra Huckabee Sanders contacts it and says, "Oh, it's been on there since 1965." Really? Because it's every 10 years and it's in the even numbers of the 10, 20, 30, 40. It wasn't in 65.
No, she's wrong about that. It hasn't been asked on the census for many decades.
Since 1950.
Yes.
And the charge of the census is to count people.
People, right? And there's a different survey, the American Household Survey that assesses citizenship. And it's clear, I mean, the thing is, like, you look at it, is it an unreasonable question? Probably not. But you have to look at what the effect of it's going to be, and that's going to be to discourage participation in the census, which is going to be to undercount the number of people who are actually here, and the people who they're going to undercount are going to be Hispanic. And, I mean, they're just the politics behind it seems really obvious to me, and the necessity for it does not jump out at me.
And the thing is that our answers on those tests affect federal funding. Up to $6 trillion in spending is affected by that. So if you have people who don't want to participate, it's going to hurt a lot of communities.
But it is a burning question these days. How many people are U.S. citizens that are here? And by the way, if you're not a U.S. citizen, it doesn't mean you're here illegally, but I think all of those categorizations are important to us right now.
Okay, so you get the form, you start to fill it out, you're illegal, and you get to the question, and you're afraid, so then you just say yes. I mean, I don't know what
it's
we're...
It's a crime
I don't know what
to lie on the census form.
Another option is don't fill it out.
And then you don't fill it out.
It has draconian penalties,
and
too.
It's not a crime not to fill out the census.
Are you being sarcastic?
No,
they're really crazy, because... The American Household Survey that came out, I think that came out in the 80s, right? The first one, 1980, was every household obviously participates in the census, but some of them were my household. I was living in with my folks at the time. Comes and it was very in depth. It was like, you know, how much do you know, income, number of cars, number of cats, stuff like that. And
13.
There wasn't anything wrong with that. But what comes? So I'm not surprised.
He's counting them in his head right now.
Yeah,
he's
really.
Like, wow, it is 13.
But the point is that if you lie on one of these forms, the consequences are considerable.
It came with a thing saying if you lie on this, it was at the time, this is 1980, it was like $10,000, 5 years in prison.
Oh,
I mean, it was like clearly, you know, just to scare the hell out of people.
And especially in this context we have now where everybody feels like their information is not private. Like, you can't fill out... I mean, technically,
yeah,
the census
form... just go to Facebook.
Just goes to the census form. But people are thinking, like, well, if I put this down here, then this is going to end up with ICE or whatever.
Right.
Because there's a big consciousness of privacy and information leakage, that people would be even less inclined to fill out the census than
Eric, that observation of yours is weirdly linked to, and we'll miss a step here and we don't have to take it, but a conversation Steve and I had about Facebook this week a couple of times in Rick Santorum, right? But so just let me skip over all that and ask you, what did you make of Rick Santorum's observation this week?
Is this really all about politics, or is it all about keeping our schools safe? Because it is about keeping our schools safe. Then we have to have much broader discussion than the discussion that's going on right now. How about kids, instead of looking to someone else to solve their problem, do something about maybe taking CPR classes or trying to deal with... They took action to ask someone to pass a law. They didn't take action to say, how do I, as an individual, deal with this problem? How am I going to do something about stopping bullying within my own community? What am I going to do to actually help respond to a shooter?
Or suggestion, you mean? It wasn't even an observation. It was taunting and menacing. And
he said that the kids at the rally should be better off learning CPR, mind you, than marching to keep guns out of schools. What was your thought about
incredibly
that?
Incredibly stupid. And I think he took it down, right? Or he tried to take it back.
He's retracted it in another interview.
The fact of the matter is I did misspeak and using the term CPR, and I think Sanjay Gupta's job here at CNN is probably safe as being the medical commentator on things. But the reality is that it
what did you mean?
It obscured the larger point. The larger point, which is that what we've seen from all of these mass shootings is that the things that have come out, the positive things that have come out of these mass shootings, are organizations and people who have actually focused on what we can do at our individual schools and communities to actually prevent these types of things. You know, promote mentoring, to stop bullying, mm-hmm. to be more aware of the problems. And what I've seen happen here is avoiding the issues that are really actually unifying. I mean, that's really the most disturbing thing.
We have more guns. Access to weapons matters. And it seems like you and others on your side of the fence are going after these kids who are survivors in the interest of political expediency.
If there's anybody that's going after folks for political expediency, it certainly isn't me.
His retraction wasn't so good either.
It reminds me of the school, where is it, where they are putting rocks in the classrooms?
Yeah.
By the way, just to be clear, there is a school in the United States which has, I believe they call them field stones in a box right. by the door. Mm-hmm. And as a last resort, the kids can throw rocks at the person with the
Every
gun.
Morning, the students Great. Go to the principal's office, they take the rocks out of his head, and then they put them in the bucket.
Yes, it's...
what I found disturbing, and this is a conversation a lot of people are having, but Rick Santorum said that when he's walking it back, he said, well, you know, I also wanted to talk about bullying and how people need to be nicer to each other. You know, I find it hard to believe that it's just white males that are being bullied in school. As one of the only Mexicans at my grade school, and I had my head held down to the pavement and force-fed garbage after school, I find it hard to believe that there aren't women and people who are transgender or people of other colors that aren't being bullied. So why is it just white boys that are carrying out these mass shootings?
I also think there are parallel tracks. I'm sorry to hear that
Patty. I just got a little fired up. What?
I get it. You know, we all see this through our own filters, and that's remarkable. But I just think these are parallel tracks that are very far apart. That is it a good idea to love one another and encourage kids to reach out to the sad boy or don't bully? Yes. But that's not what that march was about.
Well, no. It was. I defended him in saying that he couldn't possibly have meant what he said.
He just couldn't have. Yeah. If you follow this guy's career.
We fired Steve the next day, by the way.
You know, do you want me to Google other stupid things that Santorum has said? I'm more than happy to bring up the list.
So, not to mention the sweater vest.
So I think his point was, let's form local organizations to work within the schools. You know, there's value there. But in pursuing that, he negated standing up to your legislators and demanding legislation. You know, as if that wasn't something a citizen should be doing. And that's the stupidest thing. I mean, so he said something stupid he was defending something that shouldn't have been defended. And I just talked myself into a circle there. But he should have never been coming out against people peacefully assembling to call for change.
Right. And he made it sound, I don't know, feckless or something, that these students wouldn't do something on their own, but rather they're asking mommy and daddy or the legislator to fix it for them.
That's what citizens do.
I know. Well, the legislators legislate. That's their job.
I'm pretty sure he supports protests out of Planned Parenthood facilities. I'm sure he supports that.
Yeah, no kidding. Know? Now that you mention it, I suppose the object of the protest matters more to him than the fact that people protest themselves. Scotty, any last observations about that?
I'm disgusted by, you know, as someone who considers himself a product of conservative Republican politics, to hear these guys go after kids who just a few weeks ago were being shot at and saw their friends being killed. Dudes, just back off. Shut up. You have this is an important debate in our country. And you can make important points without making fun of children.
And by the way, these kids have been more effective, if you will, than a lot of efforts in the past have. I mean, that wasn't comprehensive gun legislation in Florida, but it was, as described in Time magazine this week, the first meaningful gun legislation in 20 years in Florida. That didn't happen without these kids. I mean, the legislators weren't going to do it on their own. I don't know that the state has an appetite.
And we didn't see anything like this happen after Las Vegas, after Pulse nightclub, after Sandy Hook. We did not see protests and marches and legislation happen. What we saw and what caused so many of us just to kind of ultimately just shrug our shoulders and say, well, nothing's ever going to happen, is that nothing did happen after those incredible events.
Yeah.
And so that something happened here, it means maybe the ball's rolling, the momentum has
and this is the biggest protest since Vietnam, and maybe that is a similar thing where, you know, kids who saw their own peers being brought home in body bags, and that, I mean, there's something to that.
Is anyone worried that there might be too many protests going on? I mean,
the
women's march is remarkable and, you know, awe-inspiring and all of that, and then this one comes along, and then the next one comes along, and maybe the more that we have, the less weight they're given.
That's a great point, but I think the danger is with the women's march and with the Million Mile March and marches like that, as it happens once, everyone gets excited for a few weeks, a few months, the offending parties know that they can wait them out. I hope that this actually progresses towards actual legislation.
Well, and the key, too, is the second women's march was bigger than the first,
yes,
which was surprising.
They're sustained. Yeah. They're sustaining the momentum, and I think that some of the elections around the country are bearing out the fact that people are participating and paying attention.
But, Eric, do you think that this student march is actually going to change?
Well, I remain pessimistic about this in general, but I'm less pessimistic than I was. How's that? I mean, I think it does seem like things are happening, but the gun control debate is, as we've talked about this before, is it's animated on the right by people who are really passionate about the Second Amendment, about keeping hanging on to their guns, and these bursts of energy from people on the left who want to control the flow of guns, who want to keep these guns out of the hands of bad people, it ebbs and flows so much that it becomes a minor factor in elections now. This is the biggest movement I've seen so far. So
timing is interesting too. If this was closer to an election, you might see the conversation change a little bit. Two quick subjects for you guys, and you can tell me if you want to do either, neither, or both. There's an ordinance in Chicago that will enable animal control officers and cops to break the windows of vehicles and save animals, your cat or dog, in the car that you think is in distress.
Okay.
The other topic is...
I vote yes on that one.
Chance the Rapper says that a new Heineken Light ad is racist. And Chance is smart, and he's activated. And I like how he inserts himself, say, in the education debate in Chicago and the funding. But in this case, I think he's 100% wrong. Do you know the ad I'm talking about?
I've read a little bit about it. I have not seen the ad itself. And my question is, go ahead and explain
well,
the
ad. I can do it in a sentence. It features a bartender sliding a bottle of Heineken Light down a bar, past several people of color, finally landing in the hand of a woman who is lightly skinned but ethnically blended. And the tagline is, lighter is better.
But Chance...
what were they thinking?
But okay, yes. That is a question for a lot of these commercial... You know,
they're
shooting these commercials.
Beer is better than a heavy beer or an alternative to a glass of wine.
But Chance doesn't say it, right? So does he know what the sort of idea of the campaign was going to be or the commercial itself?
I think it's a 30-second ad, and if you see it says 99 calories, lighter is better, and it goes past all these darkly hued people.
Is it clearly going from darker to light?
It's not doing that, but it's interesting how beautiful and exotic and fun and hip all of the people are that the bottle of beer is sliding by, and all of them are darkly complected. And it finally lands in an attractive but also minority, if you will. It's not a Caucasian that gets the bottle of beer. And when I saw the ad, I thought it's an ad filled with people who aren't white. And lighter is better because it's you literally had to explain the offense to me, but I think, Scott, I'm in the minority on
no,
this.
No, my reaction, I not seeing it. I mean, and I'm also wondering if the people that the bottle went by were obese, would we be talking about? Seriously, if it was just obese people and ended up with a slender, beautiful man.
I don't know the answer to that, but that's not...
They're drinking heavier beer because they're...
Okay, so Patty, finish your thought on this.
No, I think that a lot of these commercials, this also happened, I believe, with the Dove campaign when they had women taking off their shirt and they were getting progressively lighter, you know, that kind of thing, like cleaning themselves would go from black to white.
They were scrubbing it off.
Right, and there was the H&M commercial ad that also made a lot of people angry. I think that there's such a short sight. So, who's overseeing these ad campaigns? It means that there are... Well, I think
maybe
there's not enough people...
Maybe this is what Rick Santorum's doing when he's not on CNN.
Yeah.
But it wasn't their intent. There was no subtext.
It tells me that in many situations like this, and this is not isolated, there aren't enough people of color on set or making these decisions to go, hey, wait a minute, maybe you want to take a look at this.
Everybody
in
this commercial is a person of color. Maybe they weren't the deciders.
In the commercial. No, the people who are being filmed,
but none of us thinks that was the subtext, that there was no subliminal message like, wink, wink, hey, if you're white, drink this beer, or white.
It strikes me that this is something where you have this problem with a lack of diversity at the ad agencies, perhaps, that these people are not – there's not enough people who have any kind of sensitivity to this. Because I don't actually think – and I could be wrong, but I don't think that the Heineken people said, let's do a thing
where we
diss black people because then white people will buy our beer. That would be crazy. I don't think that poorly of these people.
It's ignorance.
But I think it's just the fact that they did this and nobody thought about it. And then when somebody pointed it out to them, you describe that ad, it sounds really bad to me. I hadn't actually seen it. Right. It sounds like, how could they miss that? But I believe they missed it. I think Chance was right. And also, Chance's response was measured. I mean, he didn't call for a boycott of Heineken.
No, but he said it was racist.
I don't think it is.
I think it's stupid. I mean, really, the word racist is a very particular word. It's different than racial. It's different than a lot of things. Racist implies intent. And I think that word gets misused. That's an interesting conversation to have.
I think you can have something that is on its face has a racist impact that does not come from a racist place.
Well,
but I don't know. I can't.
You sound like President Trump not knowing that he's lying, and therefore we don't accuse him of not telling the truth. I think that if you wanted to do that ad, if we had an email saying, "Hey, we'll get white people," then it's racist. But if you just had a bunch of people going, "Ah, it's a cool ad," then I don't think it is.
Would you accept racially insensitive?
Yes, I would.
Yeah. Well, and okay. I think that for a lot of people of color, there's also the subtext of, like, why did they choose the lighter shaded skin? Why was that woman more attractive? Do they know whether or not?
I don't know, but I'm guessing. Here's how I viewed the ad: it was happenstance. That it was relatively random, that there was no agenda.
I don't think there's anything random when you cast a commercial. I mean, Patty's been involved in that world.
It's always the blonde.
No, I think
they always pick the blonde.
I think the fact they picked a multiracial person or a biracial person, I haven't seen the ad, suggests that they weren't going for, let's get the white people to buy our beer.
Right. Interesting point.
I'm wrestling with your question about, or the question is something that's racially insensitive, is racist the right word to use about it? Because when you say racism implies intent, that sounds right to me. That to say this is racist is extra inflammatory. I was giving Chance credit for not, you know, calling people to march in the streets and boycott Heineken. He just wanted to call attention to this. They pulled the ad. Seems like a fair resolution to the whole thing.
Yeah. I think there are elements in psychology of not being deliberately racist. I think you can be racist without being aware of it.
We're going now to go to our thank you for that, Patty.
Okay.
I want to get Steve Bertrand's recommendation of the week and yours too.
Oh dear.
All right, this is you've got a minute to rehearse.
Okay.
Think about it. Steve, what are you reading, liking?
A writer, this guy's named Charles Finch. He writes a lot of book reviews in USA Today and Chicago Tribune too, and I met him a few years ago. He lives in Chicago now, and he's got this series, the Charles Lennox series, and the guy's a detective / member of parliament in Victorian England. And there's just something, I've recommended his books before. I'm reading a new one, which is actually a prequel to the whole thing, and it's called The Woman in Water. And for me, this is one of those books that you sit down and he just takes you to a sort of a comfortable, different sort of time. And I just love the feel when I read Charles' books. So Charles Finch, the name of the book is The Woman in Water.
And that's Steve Bertrand, who is wearing a Marquette pullover today.
Go blue. No, it's not blue.
It's Michigan colors.
Say that
though.
Again? Go blue?
No, yes, I didn't say
blue.
That.
Eric Zorn, what is your recommendation?
My recommendation is a non-recommendation. I don't think I've ever done this before, but last night, Johanna, my wife, and I sat down to watch Alex, Inc., which is a debut of a new ABC sitcom based on the life of a man who started the show Gimlet, started the podcast network Gimlet, and it stars Zach Braff. And it's awful.
What?
Is it that bad?
Wait a minute.
It is really bad.
I'm so confused.
I love him, and I loved Scrubs, and I saw the previews.
You love him,
you
love Scrubs. Alex Blumberg, the guy whose life it's based on, it made a beautiful podcast called Startup about how he started up his company. And they managed to take all these nice elements and turn it into this really lame sitcom. So my recommendation is 7:30 on Thursday nights. Do anything other than watch Alex Inc.
Oh, wow.
It's a warning, more of a...
It's a warning. My recommendation's a warning.
How about you, Scott?
A couple things. First off, we didn't talk about the Chicago ordinance, but folks, if you're listening and you're within distance of my voice, don't put your pets and leave them in a car if it's hot or cold.
Oh, we didn't even finish that topic. I'm
we
sorry.
We don't have to.
But I'm just saying, don't do, my recommendation is don't. Just be nice. Don't hurt your pets. My second one is I'm looking across the table here. I'm looking at my good friend John Williams, and he is wearing cufflinks with a French cuff shirt.
Oui,
I recommend
so
those highly. I just ordered three shirts with French cuffs.
Good.
And there's something that makes you feel adult and stylish and prettier. So that's my recommendation of the week is French cuffs and cufflinks.
How about you?
I don't know if I recommended this before because it's taking me so long to get through this book by it's the book on Abraham Lincoln, the Team of Rivals book. I'm a history major.
Is that Doris Kearns Goodwin?
It is, and I am so fascinated by the entire. I think that I'm looking for answers at where we are as a country right now and where we were then as you know as Americans, and so I recommend that book very very strongly. But it's dense. It's a thick book. The movie Lincoln was only based on basically one segment of that book.
And again, the premise of that is that Lincoln got, for his cabinet, a bunch of people together who had differing views.
Yeah,
right?
His opponents some of them were his opponents in the election, Seward and Chase. And, yeah.
It's a perfect read for now when everyone says, you know, this country has never been this divided. Really?
That's why I'm reading it, yes. Well, and that's the thing is I feel like, especially last year when we, you know, launched into this sort of new idea of what the presidency was going to be like, is I felt like we were in an ideological civil war. So yeah. That's one of the reasons.
Someone said that the Cold Civil War is what we're in right now.
Ooh.
It's an interesting term.
It is. Really, nobody's fired a shot.
So what's the book going to be called about Trump's cabinet? Team of what?
Well, it's not rivals. He just got rid of the last one, an Obama appointee at VA.
Team of nitwits. That's my name.
Oh, boy.
My recommendation is, speaking of which, is Roseanne.
Oh, yeah? You watched that?
They brought that back.
Yeah, how was it?
I never watched it. I wasn't a fan. I wasn't a hater. I just didn't watch it. I did this time. And John Goodman's such a great
John
cast.
Goodman, yes.
Roseanne's never looked better. And let's hear it for network sitcoms that are around a kitchen table again. And by the way, this one is current and political at times. And the Roseanne character, like the Roseanne actress, is a Trump supporter. Well, how many times do we see on primetime network television a main, you know, character endorsing the president? You know, network TV, Hollywood is anti-Trump. This treatment in itself is unique. I'm not saying it's great in every, you know, I've only seen two episodes, but I have found myself liking it and liking what it was trying to do, which is bring disparate sides around the kitchen table and not scream at each other as they do on cable TV.
Well, you know, I don't know if you realize how many reboots are in the works, including things like Cagney and Lacey Party of Five.
Oh my God, Cagney and Lacey, they're chasing a suspect. They're going to break a hip.
I'm guessing it's going to be their daughters are going to be, you know, their grandchildren
right.
are going to be
yes.
partnered up. But I think it's two things. Because if you see how popular Full House is, a lot of reboots are very popular right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, my husband was talking about this. It's sort of sad that Hollywood is not looking for new things, that it's going, well, here's what's working, will that work, let's do this. So I think Roseanne is sort of at a crossroads of nostalgia and people who feel like they don't have a voice. And by the way, Tim Allen's got to be angry about this, because Tim Allen was told that,
oh yeah,
he said that the reason his show was canceled was because he was a conservative, and here's a conservative who's having a very successful debut.
Producer Elif is reminding us that when we recommend shows to watch, we need to tell you how to watch them. So mine is on ABC.
ABC, yes.
And the one I did not recommend is also on ABC.
And so the cufflinks are on John Williams.
And Team of Rivals is available anywhere you buy books.
Which is in fewer and fewer places these days.
Yeah, no kidding. That.
That's why I didn't mention the one that President Trump.
It's nice to have you come into the studio.
Thank you very much.
We'll hear you pretty late on WGN Radio. That would be from 11 to 2.
11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Pretty
Scott
late.
Scott Stantis, Eric Zorn. Krista McQuarrie couldn't join us this week, but we're missing her and happy to have Patty here. Steve Bertrand just exited stage left. I'm John Williams. The Mincing Rascals podcast is engineered by Ben Cortez, and it's produced by Elif Garris. And we'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNRadio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.